One of the things I love about Able is how they celebrate women every day, from the women who make their beautiful jewelry or design the luxe leather bags and fashionable clothing. Able provides an opportunity for change. I love this company's mission. Able celebrates the strength, resilience, and beauty of all women and are offering Got It From My Mama listeners 30% off their purchases site-wide when you use the code MAMA30 at ableclothing.com. Celebrate the women in your life with a gift from Able, or just treat yourself. Where you are, as you are, Able celebrates you. Well, you may have heard that women over the age of 30 should be using a nightly retinoid, but did you also know that we should be using a vitamin C serum? Well, during the day, it helps to protect your skin from future damage and boosts the efficacy of your sunscreen. Using vitamin C serum at night helps to promote collagen production, which of course we all need. And I've been using the Barefaced Liquid Gold Vitamin C Serum morning and night for several months now, and I've noticed such a difference in my skin since I started incorporating it into my routine. I cannot recommend this product enough. I love it. You can get 15% off your purchase when you use the code MAMA15 at barefaced.com. I was so enamored with Tanner Smith the first time I saw him on the Netflix hit show Love on the Spectrum that I knew I wanted to know more about the mama that raised this joy-filled, kind, optimistic kid who's bringing so much hope to families who have differently abled children. Nikki Smith has a heart for sharing encouragement for anyone on the journey of raising a child with special needs. You'll know immediately where Tanner's enthusiasm and joy for life comes from. He gets it from his mama. Well, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate you taking the time. It'll be fun to talk about our favorite subject, kids, right?
Exactly. No, I'm so excited. This has been one of the coolest parts of this whole experience. It's just being able to talk about, you know, Tanner's journey from diagnosis to where he is today and just what it has meant for our family and how it's changed us, what it's meant for the siblings, for Mark and I as a couple, and just the faith aspect. I mean, it's just...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, could you have even imagined the hope that his story would bring to other people and families? I think that's one of the coolest things I see as an outsider looking in and having friends who have kids on the spectrum, and then for them to be able to see, like, look at this life, this full, rich life that these kids are having.
You know, that is honestly when he got chosen for the show, you know, which of course you never think will happen. You know, you send in his picture, his bio, and you think, oh, I'm sure hundreds of people are doing that. There's no way he'll get chosen. And then he did. And then we start the filming process. And I thought, well, you know, maybe for a month, 6 weeks, people will sort of know who he is. And then it'll just be this little thing and it'll fade away. But in the back of my mind, I was like, you know, if even if it's just for a short amount of time, which is a few people, if another mama who feels the way I felt 20 years ago sees him now and the level that he's functioning at, because Tanner has pretty serious deficits. I think more than people maybe realize from just what they've seen on the show and what they see online. I mean, he really struggles. He has some very severe learning disabilities.
Right.
And he has auditory processing disorder. Language and communication is hard for him. And if that mom can look at Tanner and our family and think, it's possible. There are college programs out there. There is employment out there. There is a light at the end of this 20-year journey that we're probably embarking on. You know, I just can't imagine. I never in a million years thought he would have a platform like this, you know, to be able to share that, because that's really what he is to me. I mean, like, Tanner has always been, I've always told people, each of my children represents a different part of God's provision for us, to me. You know, every one of them in a even their birth order and the way they came into our world, you know, and like, I just see how perfectly orchestrated God's plan was with the way he sent them. And for Tanner, I mean, he's always been for me faith, you know, just like that's what he represents to me. It's just faith. Wow. God has a better plan. God knows why. God has a reason for everything that he does. And none of this was an accident. And he intended for Tanner to be just as he is. And nothing, obviously, I mean, I was feeling that way just when he graduated from high school and when he was able to go to Clemson Life and when he was able to live independently away from us. I was like, every single thing that I personally did not have enough faith to believe and that I didn't think could happen, that I didn't think was possible. And of my own power, I couldn't make it happen, but it was happening quietly all the while behind the scenes. God was just answering prayer and probably just laughing, you know, just like,
exactly, yeah.
Just let me have him and back off, you know, and I'll get to it. So, but yeah, Tanner is to me a walking, breathing demonstration of God's faithfulness. I mean, that is what he means to me. When I look at him, I just think, wow, you know, God is in the miracle business and he has a purpose, a very specific one for each of us. And he really intends for you to be exactly as you are.
Exactly.
You know, I've always, you know, I think for many years, I really kept thinking about in terms of like fixing and in terms of we have to make this better. Mm-hmm. And the very thing that I was trying to, you know, push off to the side or turn it into something else, God was like, no, that's the thing that I'm going to use to really work through him and to really impact other people for good. I'm going to use that thing that is so hard and it's going to become the beautiful thing. So it's just, it really is. But yeah,
that's amazing.
Yeah. I'm just so thrilled that, and yeah. DM after DM. I haven't gotten around to answering them all because I can hardly breathe with all that's going on, but it's on my, I mean, it is a to-do list from the sweetest women. I mean, just it's, I mean, they make me cry. I'll read these DMs and I'm just like, I remember exactly how that felt. Or I remember those years, or I remember what that part of the journey was like, or the diagnostic years when you literally, it literally takes 2 years to get a label put on your child and the whole time. Yeah. You know, so anyway,
when you think back to having been in their shoes at that stage, mm-hmm. would it have been a wonderful thing for you to have seen
yes.
what they are getting to see with you and your highly functioning child?
Absolutely. And, you know, that's kind of when Tanner was diagnosed in 01, you know, we started seeing signs on like 99, but like 99, 2000. And then he was actually, I'm sorry, he was diagnosed in 02. I'm saying a year behind. There was nothing. You know, I mean, I didn't have any comparison tool. I only knew of one other family in our small community that had a child diagnosed with autism. That was an absolute godsend to me. She reached out to me immediately. She started giving me all kinds of tips and advice, and I clung to her like a lifeboat. You know, like I was just like, please help me. Tell me what to do. I have no idea. I knew vaguely what it was. I had a vague idea of what autism was and what it meant, but I knew no one. Yeah. And at that time, you know, certainly there was the internet, but it wasn't like it is today. There was no smartphone. You couldn't just, you know, tap, tap, tap and have a million different resources at your fingertips like you can today. And I'm not at all saying that it's easier today, but you do at least have quicker access to more resources.
Right.
So it really felt like a death sentence of the life that I thought he was going to have and that our family was going to have and the child, honestly, that I thought I had, because Tanner's symptoms were very vague because he never lost language. He could always speak, and like verbal acquisition and progression slowed down, but he never lost it. So it was really, you know, I would go through days where I'd be like, oh, he's okay. He's okay. And then I'd have a few days where I'd be like, he's not okay. This is not right.
Sure. Yeah. And to give a little bit of background, he was formally diagnosed when he was 4.
Exactly.
And so you started seeing signs, are you saying maybe around the age of 3?
Yeah, 2.5-ish.
Two and a half, okay.
Back, they were so blatant. But of course, I was 26. He was my second. I had a girl before him, a very, very verbal, precocious girl. And naturally, he's like, don't compare him to her. You know, she's a girl. Girls develop a little faster. Girls normally talk a little quicker.
Right.
He was extremely precocious and spoke very clearly, very well, very early. So I was like giving him a lot of grace. You know, I'm thinking he's just not where she was at the same age. But Tanner showed zero signs of anything as an infant. He breastfed like a champion. He slept well. All his like gross motor milestones were basically honestly on the early side. He crawled, sat up at like 5-6 months, crawled at 7, walked at 10. Always very loving, warm, and affectionate with my husband and I and his sister and his grandparents. And so it was around 2.5, we were building this house that I'm in now, and I was pregnant with my 3rd. And I just started noticing that his demeanor was changing. He was just getting very serious, very quiet. at playgroup, we were really involved with a lot of community playgroups. He would remove himself. If all the kids came to the slides, he went to the swings. If they came over to the swings, he went to the slides. And he didn't engage in any kind of like, you know, physical behavior with anybody. He just kept removing. And I remember too, like I would drop him off at church nursery or preschool and he would cry when I would leave him. And it was like this heartbroken, you know, as a mom, like, you know, like when they're really hurt and when they're faking, you know, you like little gut, okay, they're going to be fine. As soon as I walk out of this door, they're going to stop crying and start playing.
Right.
He would cry like he was mourning for me. It was so
wow.
And he had some very odd attachments. Like all kids might have little things they're attached to, but he acted like his life depended on it. He had this blanket. He had these two shirts he would wear, only two shirts. And he would just act like he was just, you know, devastated if you change those routines. And then as those things were the first, like very kind of not so clear things. Mm-hmm. And then we started with the lining things up and the very odd play patterns and hyper-focusing on things. Those were the days of DVD and VHS, you know.
Yeah.
He would hold like the DVD cover and just stare at it. And I would study it like he was studying for an exam. And this is after a little boy. And I was like, that's so odd. You know, like he would just hold it and just, he would turn it. And then, you know, it was a progression. Then we started into more obvious, you know, self-stimulatory behavior. We started with some flapping, a little bit of toe walking, some strange head posturing. He did a lot of kind of odd tick type things with his head. And then he started really slowing down like his conversational skills. He was speaking fine. He could state his needs. He could express himself, but it wasn't, you know, as, you know how like there's that explosion between like 2.5 or 4, but all of a sudden it's not just little, you know, 2 or 3 word exchanges. They start having conversations with you. That did not come. And it was sort of like we hit a wall. He was developing so normally. And then we kind of hit a wall and it really slowed down and then even regressed a little bit because I think he was so checked out. And, you know, at the time being very young and very uneducated, and, you know, I also had a 4-year-old and was pregnant, you know,
my God, that's what I kept thinking about as you were telling that story. I'm like, all the while she's pregnant and, and you know, like what's going on with my child? Yeah.
Right. You're thinking about this new baby that's coming along and dealing with that. And you're getting a marriage. My husband's working 2 careers. We're building a house. And I kept not wanting to believe it. I kept thinking, surely not. Surely not. I mean, when I had him, I was healthy as a horse. I was 26, had an uncomplicated pregnancy. My husband is very healthy. You know, everything seemed to, should have been great. And
for sure.
I just kept thinking, there's just no way. There's just no way something's wrong with him. This just can't be. But it got to be the point where I couldn't deny it anymore. And I finally started videoing him. You know, in those days, it was a little camcorder thing.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got to show this to my pediatrician because we weren't catching it in the office. Like we'd go in for short well checks and stuff and he wouldn't do the things in the office. And there's only so much time. So I started videoing. And when I did, and I took that to her, she was wonderful. She immediately said, oh, wow, wait, I don't like what I'm seeing. We need to start evaluation immediately. So we started speech and occupational therapy, and we got going on that like immediately. We just put him in with a speech therapist and an occupational therapist. Mm-hmm. And that is another thing I would tell every young mother who's suspicious or concerned, start early intervention. Like we did not waste a moment. And at least it was true in our case. I feel like the groundwork that we laid from ages 3 to 7 is also such a huge factor in where he's functioning today.
Wow.
Because we took those 4 years and basically ate, breathed, slept autism. We did mostly, not only, but we did a lot of ABA. We had a team of girls in the house. We turned our guest room into a schoolroom. We had 4 girls that were here 35 hours a week working with him and pretty much ran a little business, you know, out of the house. We took him out of school, brought him here, and then we slowly integrated him back into school with a shadow, supported at first and part-time, and then we went to supported full-time, and then we pulled the support out. So, I mean, I just can't overemphasize the importance of jumping on it while that little brain is plastic and things are learning, you know, and they're in that normal developmental stage anyway. It's so much easier to reroute behavior. you know, and to right. in its tracks than it is to let it become so ingrained and then have to come back and redo it. You know, we were also, we did a ton of OT. We did speech. Back then people were really big on the gluten-free, casein-free diet. We tried that. We did biomedical intervention. We did chiropractic, you name it. If I could find it and we could possibly afford it, we did it.
We did it.
And looking back on all that, and this would like be another thing I would tell young moms, I don't regret it because it gave me peace of mind to know that I was trying my very best and I was giving him everything that I had. But what he really needed, like all children, was just consistency, boundaries, love, accepting him for where he was, you know, finding that balance of pushing for his best, but not over pushing to the point of frustration. You know, that is such a parenting fine line. You know what I mean? Like pushing your child to be the very best that they can be without taking them to the point of frustration and also letting them know that you understand when they fail. You know, right. I don't think I did a very good job of that for a long time. And mostly I think that was driven out of fear. I was just so afraid of his potential outcomes. And I felt like this urgency of, you know, I have to make sure that we're doing every single thing and I'm not dropping one ball because we have to give him best outcomes. You know, this has to be, I just have to get him through this. And looking back, I'm like, you know, I probably should have chilled out a little bit and just pulled him in my lap, you know, and loved him, you know, and just been like, buddy, it's cool. We're going to make it, you know, because
I thought you were so vulnerable in the show. And that was one of the things you said that I thought was so interesting when you come onto the show and you tell the basics of when he was diagnosed. But you said, I spent almost 10 years trying to fix him.
Yes.
And all I really needed to do was let him be himself. Well,
and it really, and it was just, it was such like a, I don't know, just like a lightning bolt kick in the face kind of moment when I realized that honestly, you know, like I said, he was formally diagnosed at 4. Mm-hmm. And it was like the middle school, early high school year. So we're talking somewhere between, you know, 12 and 15. We kind of went backwards during puberty. We had made a lot of progress during the school years. And then like most kids, you know, puberty is a little bit of a spin out. It's harder when you have developmental delays and intellectual differences. It's everything's just a notch more complex, more difficult. And, you know, we were going through a really, really rough patch and we just, things were not clicking. We were not doing well in school. The auditory processing was really holding him back from taking the next few jumps academically. You know, you're getting just some erratic behavior with puberty, some moodiness, all the things that come with it. Mm-hmm. And I just remember that being a very low valley point, just like a really depleted, I'm exhausted. I have been fighting this battle for a long time. I don't want to do it anymore. I just want him to be healthy and normal. And I don't want to deal with all these things. I am so sick of evaluations and therapy offices and paperwork. And, you know, you do it so much of it for so many years. And, you know, most of them want you to start from pregnancy. And you're just like, when you've done that, you know, the 15th time, you're like, I don't know. Just help me. You know, you get to that
definitely,
point.
Yeah.
But I remember a friend of mine, a dear friend, looked at me and she was like, you know, she was like, Nikki, maybe you need to step back and just stop and say to yourself, what is God really trying to work on here? What is he really trying to accomplish here? And maybe it's not his intention for Tanner to get a whole lot better. What could you accept him and love him and be fully okay with him being just as he is today with no improvement? Can you just say, this is what God intended for his life. This is where we're at. And we're going to be okay with that. And I remember when she asked me that, and it was such like a raw, honest question, my immediate gut reaction was, hell no, I can't. And I won't. And I don't want to. This is my child. You know, I don't want to do that. I want him to be whole. I want him to get married. I want him to have children. I want him to play sports. I don't want that outcome for him or for us, to be honest. You know, I said, I don't want to have this for the rest of our lives. It's hard. And then I remember after we had that conversation and I had those thoughts, I didn't express them, but I had the thoughts. I remember just laying on my bed and just looking up at the ceiling and being like, oh my gosh, I might have to. Like, I might not have a choice because we have thrown every dollar at it. We have taken him to every specialist. We have done the things. Like, there's nothing more we can physically really do. I don't know where else to take him. He's in a special school. He had home therapy. We did it all. And maybe I really do. Maybe that really is what I'm supposed to be learning, that this is not mine to plan. He's not mine. And I just remember thinking like, okay, you know, what else am I going to do? You know, what else am I going to do but just accept the fact that my little boy has these differences and he is not the norm and life is a little harder for him, but I can't let it destroy me and I can't let it destroy our family and I can't let it destroy my marriage. And I just have to say, okay, God, he's your child. Let's just take a step back and just be good with it. And I am not kidding. It was literally like the next week after I prayed that prayer. I mean, it was extraordinarily fast. We had a couple very significant things happen and his trajectory just started going up.
With so many people coming in and out of the podcast studio, aka my living room, it is important that we keep Tucker smelling good and looking handsome. Thank goodness we discovered Coat Defense's daily preventative powder. It works like a dry shampoo and it eliminates the bacteria that causes odor in the first place. And unlike a typical deodorant or spray, Coat Defense is healthier. It doesn't mask odor, it eliminates it. Tucker's friends at Coat Defense are offering you 15% off to try this daily preventative powder or any of the other awesome products they offer for your pet's health. Just use code MAMA15 at checkout.
The heart behind the iMom podcast is storytelling, because every mom has a story to tell. I know that when I talk to my friends who are parenting and we share stories, we all end up feeling less alone and more capable of loving our kids well. You can find information everywhere on the internet. Some is bad parenting advice and some is pretty wise. We like to think there's a lot of wisdom on iMom.com, and when you combine that signature wisdom with a great story, it brings parenting to life. We want a mom who's listening to see herself and her kids in these stories and rest in the confidence that she is the perfect mom for her kids. Check out the iMom podcast with new episodes every Monday.
One of them was a cross-country race he was involved in that he did astronomically better than I would have ever thought he could. His grades came up. He had a few successes at school, kind of came out of the rough patches of puberty, and just, it was just like this steady improvement. I mean, just really like a road up. And I just remember thinking, oh my God, I am watching answered prayer, you know? And then we went on, he did graduate from high school. He graduated with a diploma, you know, definitely was, you know, special circumstances, but he has a high school diploma. And then we took a year off and he worked. He worked at Chick-fil-A and a little cafe at our church. And it was an extraordinarily good year. It was good for he and I. It was good relationally. It was good for him life skill-wise. He learned to handle himself outside of the home and without the support of teachers and just interacting with other people in the community and making friendships that were organic, that were not just from mom and dad's friends, you know. Mm-hmm. And he grew a lot. And we went through the Clemson Life application process that year. And then he got that acceptance letter. And that was, I thought, the pinnacle of his life at that time. I thought, we'll never do anything bigger ever than Clemson Life. And it was huge. I cannot, obviously, I say it all the time publicly, can't say enough about that program. Can't say enough about, you know, other programs like it. I wish that every child with a difference in America could have that opportunity.
Oh, amazing. Yes.
You know, not just for him, but for your family. You know, when you've had a special one in your house for 18 years, 19 years, 20, however long they stay home, I mean, it's a whole family thing. It impacts the way mom and dad are. It's a financial stressor. It impacts the way the siblings relate to each other. It's a stressor on the siblings. It is. You know what I mean? Like, they have a brother or sister with a difference. It's not the norm and it's harder. And it was so good for us, for him, to go somewhere where we knew not only was he having a good experience, he was cared for, he was thriving, he was being challenged. And for us just to be able to exist without that being the central focus of every single hour of every day, you know, it was helpful.
Family, the whole family.
It really was. It was good for my younger two that are, he's the second of four. And they were like at the end of high school and in junior high at that time. And it was really good for them to not always be in the shadow of their special brother's needs, you know, and they got a little time to shine and a little, it was really good for Mark and I, and just to be able to enjoy them without feeling the, you know, always splitting the time, you know, yeah. Of taking him to his stuff and then going to their stuff. And it was just amazing. And then he graduated, which was, of course, like, you know, as big as a wedding, you know, for our family, us that stage at Clemson University with his Clemson ring on, you know, and you're just like, oh my God, you know, you're seeing this little boy that was in the doctor's office, you know, getting that paper that says he's autistic. And here he is walking across the stage. And I thought, oh, this is it. You know, we have done it. You know, there's nothing else he has to accomplish. And now he's on Netflix.
Now he's a Netflix superstar. Oh my goodness.
I mean, it just, you know, the verse about like, he can do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine.
Exactly what was in my head. I was just about to say that exact thing. I said, it is truly just like God to do more than we can ask or imagine. I mean, you can't even, sometimes I just say like, I can't even pray prayers as big as the ones that I feel like the Lord has answered in these places in our life. Like
never. And we didn't, we had no agenda or ulterior motive with the show. Literally, it was just one of those things. We're like, well, wouldn't that be a hilarious memory if he happened to get picked? You know, we were like, we can look back someday and say, oh wow, remember when he did that Netflix show? Wasn't that fun? You know,
did you watch the first season and were a fan of the show and you loved kind of the premise? And
I did, and I thought that Keon, you know, the producer, just did a beautiful job of being really respectful and keeping it. Just really showcasing people as they really are, you know, what's hard for them, yet also where they really shine and where they maybe, you know, do really well. And I felt like he hit that balance because a lot of times, you know, you watch things on TV and you're like, that's not very realistic. You know, I felt like he really does a beautiful job and just showing these people how they are. You know, and I could so relate to it, having an autistic person and knowing a lot of them. And so I had watched both Australian seasons and the first US season.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. And just, and of course, anything that's, you know, particular to autism, I'm going to be attracted to and I'm going to check out because I'm always trying to learn and I'm always trying to get other people's perspectives. And you gain something from everybody you interact with. You know, I've learned more from other autism moms than anybody. No shame. Teachers, they're amazing too. But the moms are where it's at.
Yeah, the moms who are walking the walk and knowing have been in the shoes, literally. What was the process to get him on the show?
Honestly, it was an Instagram casting call. And it was just a post that Northern Pictures, that's the production company, put out. And they said, if we are going to be filming in the southeastern United States, and they named the cities, and Greenville, South Carolina was one of them. Or they were looking, you know, to film in these cities. And they said, send in picture and a brief bio, age, you know, vital statistic information, you know, and maybe, and I did, and got an email that day.
Same day.
They were like, we're very interested. We'd love to talk to you and to him. And I was like, okay.
What did he think? Did he even know? Like, had you said, okay, Tanner, I think I'm going to, or had he watched the show?
I had showed him the show. Honestly, he was never that interested in it. He's a big animation guy. Animation.
Oh, animation. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Likes movies and, you know, he loves to watch things that are cartoons. I mean, he does watch some other things and he had seen like snippets and bits and pieces and he knew what it was about. And, you know, and we, of course we said to him, Tanner, you know, would this be cool? Cause he had not dated. He'd been to like formal events and throughout high school and his college years, but never on a real romantic, like I asked you, because I'm interested in you, as more of a friendship setup type of thing. And I said, Tanner, you know, we had been talking about dating around that, you know, like, you know, he'd had a couple girls he thought were cute. I said, would this be a cool way to just see what happens and see if you like it and just, you know, at the same time have an adventure? And he's so outgoing. He loves to meet new people. He just likes people. He's very, and he was like, sure, I'll do it. And he's zero inhibitions or camera shy. Like that's a beautiful part, at least of his particular brand of autism. He has absolutely zero thoughts of like, how do I look? Am I cool? He doesn't think like that. He just,
I love that.
Yeah. And it really is just a beautiful part of who he is. He's
all learned so much from that.
Absolutely. He doesn't worry like, you know, how's my hair today? Am I having a little breakout? He don't care.
He's worried about his eyebrows.
Right?
What in the world? That is the very first thing you see of him. I'm like, oh my gosh, I love him so much.
About that, when he said that, and it was adorable the way the take that most of the public took with it. And it did seem like he was asking about, like, how do they actually look? I think knowing him, and I asked him after and he confirmed, I said, Tanner, were you wondering how your facial expression was? Like, were you making the right kind of face?
That's what I thought he meant.
Yeah, he did. He didn't really never waxed his eyebrows or groomed his eyebrows in life. You know, never. He does not care about things like that.
I thought he meant, you know, do I look expressive enough? Do I look, because he's so expressive. But I thought that
exactly what, because you know, he says, how's the smile?
Yes.
He says that like in another scene. I think he's really asking like, am I doing the right thing with my facial expression? I think that's what he really meant. And it just, I don't know, he just couldn't think of anything. So he said my eyebrow.
That made me laugh so hard. Well, I will tell you as a compliment to you that when you come on the scene for the first time, you come see him at his apartment to help him get ready for his date. And I just immediately, you know, this podcast is called Got It From My Mama, but I was like, oh my goodness, he gets that joy and exuberance from his mama. Like, it was so evident that that is the model that you have been for him on his journey.
That's so sweet of you to say that. It means a lot to me because that was one thing I was really convicted about at that same time that I had the kind of like the realization that I just need to accept the situation and genuinely, truly give it over to the Lord and just let him have it. Mm-hmm. I was so convicted in my heart about the way I interacted with Tanner. Oh my gosh, we are a very close family. We're a very silly family. We joke, we run around, we laugh, and we're all up in each other's business and all, you know, all jokes. But I know for years, and it was because I was so heartbroken, I always felt like he was absorbing frustration and stress from me, not at him, but at his circumstances and at my fears for him were coming out. And I know that he probably looked at my face a lot and saw a lot of stress and a lot of worry and a lot of just tension, you know, all the time. And I remember having that thought, if you don't want him to be stressed, worried, and tense and anxious, you don't need to project stress, worry, tense, and anxiety, you know, tension and anxiety on him. You need to just love him and let him know that you think he's wonderful, that you enjoy him, that you like him just as he is, and that he is a beautiful person and that you are not unhappy with him. You know, because whether how things come across isn't always how you really feel. Mm-hmm. And I was so convicted about that. And that was also such a change in our relationship when I started making a conscious effort. Like the minute he walks down the stairs in the morning, smile at him. Like the first thing he should see is a welcoming, loving mom smile, not a tense mom thinking about, okay, we have to go to this appointment and then we have to get the schoolwork done and then we have to practice these skills. And, you know, I don't need to be doing that to him. He's a little kid. You know, or he was.
I think that's just good parenting advice in general. Whether you have a significant diagnosis, like what your family dealt with that, but I think in general that we can admit whatever our frustrations are. Maybe they're even work or life frustrations, but particularly even parents who are concerned about personality traits they see in their kid, or you know, I have friends whose kids have gone through a goth stage or something like that. But they are admitting their fears and their concerns and their worries. And what it says to those young people is they don't like me the way I am.
Absolutely. And I was so convicted about that. And I thought, man, oh, I was so convicted about so many things. And I know when the kids were little, I struggled a lot with just, you know, being short tempered and just being sharp with them and fussing at them and raising my voice when I didn't need to. And it was because internally I was just boiling with fear and worry. Mm-hmm. And anxiety about mostly him. Yeah. And then, you know, I kept thinking like, what do we all want? We want to be loved and celebrated and accepted for who we are. And we want the significant people in our life to guide us and protect us and love us. That's what most people want.
Yeah.
That's really all I'm supposed to do. I'm not.
His basic needs were no different than.
It is.
You know. Anybody else.
It isn't my job. I finally had to realize too, and it's for all of them, their eventual outcome is not my job. That's their job.
That's hard though, isn't it?
Yes, it's worse.
Hard.
It's worse. I was like, it's my job to give them the tools to get there. It's my job be a sounding board. It's my job to give the boundaries. It's my job to love unconditionally. It's my job to forgive when they have, you know, missed a mark. It's my job to celebrate when they do hit it big. You know, it isn't my job to guarantee that there's this certain outcome that we have. You know, that ball, and even him in a little different way, because he does need more support. But even for him, that's true. You know, Tanner needs to define his own life, just like my children do. And I would never put that on them. You know, so why was I putting it on him? Yeah. And, you know, you realize a lot too when you're a special needs parent. Like, it is truly one of the most humbling things you'll ever go through. Because Mark and I both were very type A, we're very driven, we're very productivity oriented. We like to get stuff done. It makes us feel good. You know, we like to check our list off. That's how we like to roll. And we both had to look at each other and just laugh at some point, because we were like, God is hilarious, because he gave us this thing that we absolutely have no control over. You know, we cannot engineer this. We can't use our energy and our drive and our energeticness to make this perfect. Right. We just let it roll.
Yeah.
And that is so
it's amazing what our kids will teach us, isn't it?
Yes. Isn't it though?
I was curious to ask you about being a family of faith and taking a step forward into doing a show like this, which obviously is secular in nature and shows all the things. Did you have conversations ahead of time knowing that, you know, you wanted Tanner to feel comfortable? Like, he immediately says, I want a Christian girl. And then you see him pray. Were you concerned that those types of things would get cut out? Or, I mean, we know how much editing goes on.
I was very concerned about the editing in general, even outside of that, just because I didn't want them to present Tanner in a false light. And you do sign away you do take a big chance. I mean, anybody that's doing this, it's a huge chance. You don't know, because you sign and they have that film and they can they can turn it any way they want. But as this is another compliment to the production crew of that show, and Keon in particularly, the fact that he let every individual on that show let their beliefs shine through. And I mean, everybody on the show is different. They all from different backgrounds, which is great. They all have different belief systems or different life outlooks. And he didn't cut it. And I was so, so pleased that he did not, you know, take that out just because it may not be what mainstream society is real, you know, that's what he wants to see. But he let Tanner be Tanner. And we told Tanner, you just handle yourself like there's no camera there. And we just kept telling him, all you have to do is be you, buddy. All you have to do is be you, because you're so sweet. And everybody, he had this sort of magic before the show, like around Clemson in our hometown. He's been like a little local celebrity, and the people in our town have been so good to him, just overly good to him. And at Clemson, not just Tanner, every young adult in that life program is treated like a movie star. I mean, if you walk downtown Clemson and you see the life kids out and about, they're getting high five, pounded on the back, told how awesome they are. They know everybody.
I love that.
It's the most beautiful thing. So it is. And that's another thing, like, I really want people to know, like, Tanner is not just, I mean, like, he is unique, but also there are so many of his peers and friends that are just as amazing and have just as cool as stories and have just overcome unbelievable odds themselves. And they are just, and it really is an amazing thing, the way Clemson nurtures that and the way they really encourage that in the rest of the student body, to really lift these people up and make them feel like they are part of things. It's a beautiful thing.
That's such a special program. Did you have the same fears, but maybe escalated, that every mom does when their kid goes off to college? Because we should probably note that Clemson is a couple hours from you, right?
Almost three.
That was an extra big step for you, wasn't it, as mom?
It was literally like, it felt like someone was taking my arm, and I almost couldn't get in the car, because I just really didn't believe. He had never really left me. And like, he had spent the night like at my parents' or my sister's, but just a night, you know, here and there. I was going right back to get him the next day, always with family. He had gone to one church camp, but one of my daughters went with him, you know, so it was never, he did not go spend a week at the beach with little Joey. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, not
never been away from me. And of course you have that fear, like, can he do it? You know, can he do this? Will he respond to other people? And it was the first time, though, when we left campus that day, we stopped by the teachers' offices to actually pick up some t-shirts. And a bunch of the professors and teachers were sitting in the lounge area. And they were like, how are you? You okay? You know, it's going to be all right. Kind of reassuring us. And I remember one of them patted me on the arm as I was walking out. And she said, Nikki, she goes, we got him. She said, you go home. She said, just let us have him. We have him. And it was the first time. And I'm sure every other special needs mama in the world can relate to this, that anybody had ever said to me, I got it. You go rest, you go attend to something else. And don't, this doesn't have to be the foremost thing in your mind for a little while. I'll handle it. Because wow. when your child is growing up and they need all this extra help and attention, don't get me wrong. We had some amazing therapists, some unbelievable teachers, people that I will be grateful to till the day I die. But it's always like mom has to be driving it. You know, you got to be checking behind. You got to be making sure all those supports are in place. You got to be making sure that all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted. And you never really feel like you can truly hand it to someone.
Right.
Does a beautiful job of, because, and the way it's structured, the kids have to achieve certain benchmarks to get to the next level. They have to prove that they can do level one to go to level two, to level two to level three. It's a beautiful way of doing it because part of level one is separating from mom and dad and really and truly acclimating into with your ILA, which is your independent living assistant, and your professors, learning to respond to them and not being dependent on mom and dad, which is healthy for everybody because don't all kids take a step away from that daily.
So similar.
I remember the first few days home after dropping him off, feeling like I had forgotten something, like I hadn't done something, like and just empty and sad and just like this sense of loss. And like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't know if I can be okay with not knowing where he is. I would think to myself, I don't know what he's wearing. I don't know what he ate for breakfast. I'm not sure that he brushed his teeth, you know, because I had been over those things for so long, but you know, that's healthy too.
Oh, it's, for sure.
You know, sure. When your son is 19, 20, you're not supposed to know, you know,
I mean, like my girls. Did he do good with the transition away from you?
He did amazing. He hit a homesick spell at about the 3-week point, which they said is very typical, but it was nothing we couldn't work through. And all it required was a couple extra phone calls. You know, extra phone call time, a little more FaceTime so that he could get that little bolster of, you know, mom and dad are here. It's okay. But honestly, he sailed. I mean, he really did probably the most instrumental, best thing we ever did for him. And, but now, you know, who knows? Who knows what he's got up his sleeve?
I'm telling you, every time something pops up, you're like, wow, this too. What are some of the fun experiences that you and your family have had since his popularity on the show?
The one that stands out is the Kelly Clarkson show. That was such a positive experience. Laura Palmer was our producer. And she is probably the nicest, most attentive, sweetest person I've ever met. She went out of her way to accommodate his needs, to make sure that he understood, that he wasn't, that we didn't do anything that would be anxiety inducing, because he does struggle with anxiety. And she was just, and Kelly was so kind. And what I really loved about it was it wasn't just about him being on a reality show. I mean, not to diminish the show was wonderful.
Right.
But they really focused in on the shepherd and the mission of the shepherd and on his independence and employment, which is really the message if he's going to have this platform that we really want the world to see. He is a person with autism who also has pretty severe learning disabilities, but he lives in an apartment, manages it alone, gets up and takes himself to work, cooks his own little meal, goes out with friends, and has a very full and happy life. That's really what we
and
want.
You really do get that out of the show and his experience and what it showed. Everything from, you know, even cooking the hot dogs, but living independently with the roommates and thank goodness for companies like the hotel that say we're going to pour into.
I think the thing that has really struck me, we did an interview with News Nation. He did a local news interview. He's just met so many people since January 19th when the show came out. And it's just been, we've mentioned it within our family. Everyone has been so kind. Mm. Every It's really like renewed my faith in the world. And the other cool thing is I feel like every experience, we always somehow get intertwined with somebody whose world is impacted by autism, whether it's an autism mom or a sibling. And it's always kind of like organic, not planned. But we'll go do this interview. And like one of the producers on News Nation, she's an autism mom. And I was like, you know, and then she gets our story. And it was just so cool to talk to her.
Yeah.
And I feel like none of that is by accident. You know,
yeah, I feel like the Lord is just placing you in positions to share your story with who needs to hear it.
Yeah. And that I never hoped for. And, you know, of course you have, here and there, you have days where you're like, oh gosh, is this the right move? Should we be having him out there, you know, and letting the whole world see into his life and letting, you never know what opinions people are going to have. And you don't know who might not like him.
Right.
Have a negative take on it or throw negative things at him. And there is that chance, of course, and it's very scary. But every time I think it or I worry about it, I feel like the next day something will happen that just confirms that what he's doing. And I think that's like people that are like praying for us, that is what we would want, just that we would stay true to his mission and that we would use his platform for good things. And a lot of it, not even just autism awareness and educating people about programs like Life and the Shepherd, but Tanner's funny. He's fun. I mean, like he and all his buddies, they're just silly and funny. Yeah. It's sort of like bring everything into focus. Like it's not really that serious. Just laugh and have a good time and just be grateful for what you have, because that is honestly how they live. They are all his best little buddies. They are all like that. Every one of them. They are so thrilled when you show up, and we're just, you know, we might be going to a restaurant we've been to 15 times and they act like it's the first time, and they're just there and spending time with them.
Aww.
They don't need much and they're looking for much. And what they really want is just relationship. And I feel like that's another thing, like just the simple joy that they have in day-to-day life. And when I say they, I mean Tanner and all his friends who also have differences. That's, you know, that's really what I want people to see too. Like that's the joy of people with special needs. They just have a little different take on the world and a little less complicated view of what we should be worrying about and enjoying and how we should be interpreting our daily life. You know, they're just so much happier.
Well, and again, look how much we can learn from that perspective that they have on life, that we have all these other things that weigh on us and keep us from having that same sense of just daily simple joy that they have.
Exactly. And that's, you know, that's another big thing that I really hope translates through his, you know, social media posts and everything else. It's more than just, oh, we're just promoting, you know, this show that he was on. Really let people see, you know, when you meet someone special needs, you just never know what they might bring into your life, you know? So go ahead and create that friendship and go ahead and get to know them. And, you know, you just never know what they might teach you or how much they might really enrich your life, because they have a mission too.
Absolutely.
Yes.
My goodness. Yeah, I could talk to you all day. You've shared just so much wisdom in not only your particular situation, but just in being a mom in general. I just feel like there's so many things that you can actually just apply to whatever journey that we are all on, for sure. Are people lining up at the hotel to meet Tanner?
I think it might have slowed down a little bit now, but it's been,
Really. I thought about that as I was watching. Yeah. I'm like, oh my goodness, I bet people are like coming just to meet Tanner.
A lot of phone calls, a lot of visits. They did have to help him come up with a little script, because for a while there it was, and not, I mean, certainly don't want anyone to think we don't appreciate the interest in him, but it was, you know, he is at work. When he's at work, he has a task list and he has to get it. And he's also, he gets it honest, he's very performance oriented, and he will get a little anxious if he feels like he's not getting it done. So a few days, there was like a lot of people coming in and it was holding him back, and he was really getting worried, and he was acting very agitated, and his boss was like, he's really upset. And we finally figured out he's not upset at all that people want it. He'll take 50 million pictures. He loves it, doesn't mind. He was worried about not accomplishing his tasks and not
knew what the job was. Yeah.
And so we come up with a little, very nice little, you know, he tells people, I can take a quick picture or I can give you a quick high five, but I can't visit for a long time because I'm on the clock. And so once he had that tool, he was good to go.
That's all he needed.
And that was another time where I had to realize he needs support. and he needs scaffolding, you know, to know how to navigate these situations, because it is hard. It would be hard for anybody. And like, I always tell people, I'll see people recognize him when we're out and about, and some will just look at him like, and I can tell they want to come talk to him. And I'm always like, come on, he'll talk to you. He doesn't mind. Like, and he doesn't. He loves it. He's always like, what's your name?
And he doesn't forget it when he hears it, right?
Exactly. 10 years later, he'll know exactly what color shirt you were wearing and where he saw you.
Family is delightful. And I love that the Lord has given y'all this platform to use, one for education, but for people to see the joy and the outcome and the hope that they too can have, no matter what their circumstances with their kids.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to talk to you.
Thank you.
Hey, do yourself a favor and follow Tanner with the Tism on social media. His posts will absolutely make your day. And if you are enjoying this podcast, will you subscribe and share this podcast with your friends? It is the most helpful way to help us grow and to continue to bring these special interviews at no charge to you each week.